For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 157, Seven Psychopaths in a Cemetery equals Great End.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
For Boston, for Boston.
Bastards and wenches, you may be seated, and welcome to another episode of the Boston Bash Brigade. I'm King Baby Duck.
I'm scared. I mean, Bluonic.
And before we go into the show, we gotta say a big, big, big thank you to Electric Eel Shock for sitting down with us with that fun little interview.
Yeah, that was an awesome interview, and I was able to take some more great pictures again.
Yep.
I'm really maybe thinking about leaning into doing more photography stuff.
You do a good job, dude. You do a fantastic job.
Yeah, I just wish I had a bit more of a professional camera. As much as everybody's like, you got a professional camera. Like, you don't know what a professional camera is until you see one it's got the Hubble telescope on it. Yeah.
I know. But it's a $500 camera that you got for a very good price.
Yeah, from used. But yeah, I mean, the only problem that I have, like, saying I was at a party last night, and there were some of the pictures that were key, you know, like, just simple little pictures and whatnot. People were standing, sitting still, doing all that other stuff, and sometimes it got a little blurry. But I don't know if that was my hand moving, or just the thing wasn't fast enough on the drawer. I don't know, but it's sometimes some of the pictures got a little bit blurry, but whatever. And it sometimes it actually goes with it, like, when I was taking the pictures for the concert with, Math the Band.
Yes.
I have some things to say about that, but anyways, like, the movement of the band, like, how fast they were doing stuff, like, how I was taking a couple of the pictures, like, I was switching between settings and just clicking off a couple of pictures and seeing how it worked. There was one where I caught the girl, like, in middle swing of, like, hitting the drums, and it was kind
of...
that
was awesome,
but scary at the same time, because of the craziness and of what they presented, like... When you see a girl and a guy get up on stage, and they seem rather normal. I mean, okay, I was like, okay, this girl's wearing all black. She looks like something like, you know, she's got like gymnast type clothes on or workout or something with a bandana.
And he's wearing a head.
He's wearing a head bandana with a weird beard going on, and he's got a white shirt and some like workout shorts or something like that. And he's got a guitar. And it's funny because when he started walking around on the stage or something like that, the first couple times, he puts on the guitar, he strums it a little bit for a second, and then he just drops it around his waist. Like, he just... I've never seen anybody drop a guitar like he did. Like, he just goes and just swivels it over his body, and, like, he's so skinny that he's able to just let it just drop down his waist and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, like... Even, like, my nephew, who will remain nameless... He was like, what the hell? I've never seen anybody do it that way. I was like, me neither. What the hell's going on? So then when they provide the actual song to us, or songs...
Can you say hipster mosh pit?
I couldn't believe it. It was almost... you know what? It See, like, I liked the whole setup when I went to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones concert. I was, you know, expecting that kind of stuff. When they popped up and, like, some of these people that looked like they were kind of, like, Mighty Mighty Boston's, you know, kind of people.
Ska people.
Yeah, the ska type people. I'm cool. I like ska. I like the ska thing. But when these people came on, it was the scariest dancing I've ever seen. It looked like zombies dancing at a high rate of speed and jumping around and mosh pitting, which is illegal in this state now.
Yeah.
So, But for the most part, yeah, I was had a bit scared. Still couldn't understand most of the stuff that was saying until that part where they were like, I hope you fucking die. that I understood. I understood that part. But some of the other parts of the song, I still couldn't understand what he was saying because of the fact that they turned down the mics a little bit more than, like, from what I could hear. So you were getting blasted by the music, but you just weren't hearing exactly what they were saying. But lo and behold, later on I went, huh, let me go and check out one of their music videos. I checked out two, and I thought I was in a psychedelic haze that I couldn't get out of for, like, at least a whole hour.
His head exploded into pasta!
Yeah, and then, like, the whole concept is that guy is, like, soup or whatever the hell ended up on his suit just, like, would pop in and out on like, the actual scene when they're, like, walking around, and I didn't get it. It was something about a haircut. Why didn't you get a haircut or something like that? It was just, like, really wrong. I'm kind of scared, but I'm also kind of glad we know them at the same time, too. So if you ever need anybody to go fucking completely off their rocker on some music, that they're the people to do it.
Not the band. Because I was talking about before the show, and our friend...
they seem normal. And then, yeah. No, I was
kidding. Our friend Pink Taco, when she had her band Rainbow Terrace, they opened up for them while they were at the Gulu Gulu. And apparently, Math the Band is the reason why the Gulu Gulu Cafe has a strict policy on acoustic live performances only now.
Well, that's the only thing, is that place is a very small venue to begin with. Let alone, like, the couple times that I was able to go, that, like, some guy was just playing on a guitar, that was a bit too much, just in general, on electric. But, so, I mean, if you just play acoustic there, that's perfectly normal, but with how they play,
Yeah.
Yeah, I was,
I'm surprised that the Gulu Gulu was still standing afterwards.
Yeah, they could have knocked the whole sucker down. And I mean, like, they would have taken out the army barracks next door, too, if it was as crazy as they played.
Mm. So, with this being the first time seeing Electric Eel Shock live, because this was my third time. I've seen them once at the same venue, and...
Rub it in!
Yes, and I saw them five years ago, in Shibuya. In Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, that's right, when you went on that trip, yeah.
Yeah, with this being the first time seeing them live, what are your thoughts of Electric Eel Shock's live performance?
Their live performance is very, very, very good. It's just, it impressed the hell out of me. They did a great job, especially, what's his name there, the bassist?
Kazuto,
yeah, he jumped off the top part of the speaker system. The drummer is naked and rocking a tube sock, so he's not completely naked. You don't have to see his penis. I did see his buns. I didn't want to see his naked ass. I was kind of scared of that, but it was kind of interesting because of the fact of how he drums. He uses two sticks. He, like, Wolverines it. He puts two sticks between his, like, pointer finger and middle finger, and then another one between his pinky and whatever the hell you call that finger.
Yeah.
And he just goes and he just drums at it, and he was absolutely friggin' amazing. And, like, to go and sit there where he was next to us in the interview, and he was quiet. He was just... He didn't say much. I don't know if he, like, knew a lot of, like, English or whatnot.
I think of all three of them, he's the one that
less knowing of English, like,
yeah, and whatnot. Kazuto and Aki know more English.
But for the most part, he seems really quiet. But then when he gets up there and he gets rocking on the drum set, I would say it's poetry in motion besides the nakedness. But the concept is he looks happy. Like, that's one of those things where it's like, when you know in life where you want to be is if behind a guitar, a bass, yeah, or a mic or drums. That's where he likes to be. I could see his happiness come out, and just he started playing and wailing on drums. That was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful.
Now, going back to the way he drums, because he's the one who invented the double piece drumming. And their, like, own record label is known as Double Piece Records.
Yeah.
And that's how you describe it. And I can't think of any other artist I've ever seen.
I've never seen anybody really drum like that. That was one of those unique drumming styles I've ever seen. And I'm because I've got so many drumsticks now at home, I'm going to give it a try when I'm playing Rock Band.
Okay.
I want to see how bad it how bad it either hurts my hands or if it works in general.
Okay, well, I'll do it, and I'll record you trying it, and I'll post it onto his Facebook page.
Yeah.
Now, with Aki, the way that he performs, the way he sings, just how crazy he is on stage with
the other two. Yeah, he's actually, that's the funny thing. Like, when you do, like, an interview, it doesn't really show the person. It doesn't really show them until they get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they get on stage, they're all over the place. I mean, it's not in the bad way. I mean, it's like, they have this never-ending energy that they feed off the crowd, and it keeps them going. And it's scary, because it's like, you know, when we get to the P. Lander Z part, I'll explain a little bit more on that. But
yes.
But I mean, like, with how these guys were, it's like, they were nice and quiet and all this other stuff. And
yeah, they're very modest.
They're very cool. And then all of a sudden, they get on stage, and they're freaking crazy. It's just awesome. I loved how they play their music, and it was done very well, and especially with my nephew, because he's a metalhead. He loves it, and he was blown away. He was like, this is good. He's like, this is really good. I like them.
Because I was trying to convince him about Electric Eel Shock a few weeks beforehand, and he was like, no, I don't like Japanese heavy metal. Well, I converted him.
Yeah, well, I'm not talking about complete conversion, but he definitely had his eyes open last night. The other night with a can opener.
Yes.
It was definitely. I mean, you've played their music tons of times.
You,
I've heard
you
it.
Get you you now understand why I put him so high on the pedestal.
Yeah, they're very good when you go and see them live. It's really good. You know, that's the other thing I feel is sometimes, like, when you get them in the recording studio, they record their music. But until you actually see them perform the music live, you don't know how they are.
Yeah.
And I've dealt with sometimes situations like that, or I've heard very horror stories, more or less, where everybody
like loves, Dillinger Escape.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of their songs. I actually remember that I had a couple of their songs beforehand on that other thing. And then when I got and saw them, I was like, this was shite. So more or less, it was one of those things where, like, I think I heard about Papa Roach at one point, where they had some really, you know, music that was popular at the time.
Right, they had Last Resort,
and I remember when MTV was actually MTV, and they actually had the MTV News pop on, and the guy, Kurt Loder, is it Kurt Loder?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kurt Loder, I'm really, really old, I'm Grandpa.
Kurt Loder, more or less Papa Roach up on stage, and apparently turned around and dropped his pants and took a shit on the stage. They had to get a biohazard clean team to clean it up, and have a nice day. That's basically, I was like, holy crap. More or less, the crowd booed the living hell out of him and told him to get off stage, and he turned around and took a big giant shit on the stage. So more or less, it's just one of those things where we've had bands that, great music, great, you know, great setup that they can do in the studio because of the fact that they have a controlled environment. But as soon as you go and bring it to a live aspect, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely
horrible. I've heard similar things happening with the band Jet.
Yeah.
How horrible they are live.
Yeah.
And I've seen video performance of them, and yeah, they're not that great. But Electric Eel Shock, on the other hand, they're a group that can capture that live sound in the studio. If you've ever listened to any of their songs from Beat Me or Transworld Ultra Rock or Sugoi Indie, they have the same raw energetic power on the songs, on the CD, that you'll see on stage. Granted, you won't get the visualization. I see, like, the visualization as sort of like the icing of the cake.
Yeah.
But there's so very few bands out there that can really capture the live sound on CD and then bring it onto the stage.
Almost definitely. Yeah. It's just one of those things that, yeah. I mean, the other thing who opened up for the actual gig is Sam Mulligan. He's awesome. He's an awesome little act himself. He's a one man band, you know, or he has big hands and he likes women's, and he's a big giant one hand band man kind of
guy.
So he's awesome in that sense because, you know, he's not. I think he's kind of a little bit quirky, but it's in a cool way. Like he's able to like. Kind of like joke around with the crowd, but at the same time do his little bit like playing the music. He's awesome on guitar.
He's great on guitar.
And my nephew's eyes like lit up, and I was like, "Yeah, you got to learn how to play like that." And yeah, because he's just rocking like you know the normal like looking electric guitar. My nephew's got like a BC Rich like serious warlock setup on it, and it's glorious. And when he plays, it's amazing.
Yes.
But I'm like, he needs to keep playing and keep going and stuff like that. So if he wants to get up on a stage sometime and actually play, you know. So more or less getting to know Sam, because I was talking to him afterwards, I'm trying to see if I can help him out with, like, because he liked the pictures I took of him, but also, like, he was he likes to record himself when he's doing these little, you know, his shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hey, maybe sometime I could take that camera from you and I'll record for you, or I'll get a camera from, you know, the place that I work at, record for you, you know, and get the actual good sound off of it, not have the vibration aspect and get it off the soundboard that's in the background. So more or less, yeah, it's just how you present yourself. Like, the music itself is great. Yes, fine. I can listen to that damn track all day long, or get blasted by the same freaking one every two seconds on the radio. Like,
yeah,
like
most radio stations are here in the Boston area.
What's that damn song that does a Microsoft like Internet Explorer commercial there?
Tonight.
No. That's the wrong one. No.
And it feels like,
yeah, that one.
Just too
I kid you not.
Love you.
I was with my girl, and we were driving around, and we just finished listening to that song. We changed to the next channel, and it was on the same damn song right on the next channel. It's mm-hmm. like they can't figure out like how not to space that thing. So it's like now all the music is all,
yep.
It's horrible. But yeah, just to say, like, you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, prepare yourself for whatever you're gonna get into when you watch these concerts, you know?
Yes.
but to go back to Electric Eel Shock, they were absolutely stunning. I like their whole setup, how they came out. It looked like the lead singer slash guitarist was a little bit like, he probably gets his nervous jitters, that's why he had his hands over his mouth for a second, running around in the middle.
Yeah.
But I think that's his whole, like, little pre-show kind of like
pre-show jitters.
Yeah, get ready and get going.
Because he needs to get into the zone. He needs to get himself prepared for the audience.
And I love how they started the first one with they were talking to Boston. They're like, Boston, 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 and then he's like, Bastard.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah, because there
was like,
song.
Damn it, he could have mentioned us at that time.
Almost.
Yeah, I
just
know.
Just one word off.
He was just. I think that was funny when
because he was pointing at me when he was screaming bastard.
Yeah, when we originally tossed him our card at him, and he said, "Boston bastard, what's brigade mean? What's brigade?" And we kind of explained it to him the best we could at the time.
Yes,
you know? We were like, "I, what did you say?"
Well, I told him that we're called Brigada as an homage to Melancholy Haruhi Suzumiya, or over in Japan,
yeah,
Suzumiya Haruhi no Yutsu. And I told him over here in America, the group SOS Don is known as SOS Brigade.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it's a team.
Yeah, so more or less I explained it as like, okay, if you got a military group and then there's bigger groups of the military, it's called like a brigade. So they were like, oh, okay, yeah. And then, you know, they all were like understanding about that setup. So they more or less, they like that, the actual name, I think. So
yes.
A lot of people like our name.
Yeah. And you were like a little bit worried at first.
I am still worried about it, but apparently I'm okay because, you know, I'm getting a chance at auxiliary. Even though I explained that I was on this show, and they were like, it's like, really? I've heard the show. I was like, oh crap, and I just told you that I didn't think we'd get out that far, but okay, well that works.
Yeah, but Electric Ear Shocker, very terrific. Go on to iTunes or Amazon.com and find their albums and download them and listen to them. Have your friends listen to them and so forth and so forth and so forth. Because this is a band, as I mentioned in the interview, they play small clubs around here, okay, as they do in Japan. But in Europe, they're headlining, you know, some, not the main stage, but one like they're good enough to headline one of the stages.
Yeah.
At festivals.
Yeah. But the other beautiful thing was it was the next day. They were already like taking our pictures that we put up and all that other stuff, and they were posting it on their Facebook and trying to get us out there as soon as possible. So that's the other thing is that we like to have that kind of like
camaraderie.
We work, we do our work and stuff like that. They do theirs, and everybody comes out on top because of the fact that they're willing to work with each other.
Yeah. So, as I told Aki when it came time to do an interview, what's good for the band is good for us.
Yeah.
And I think they like that. A lot of people don't notice, but when we set out to do interviews or anything like that, we make 100% sure that everybody is comfortable.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
because
even though we keep bringing them to the same pizza joint, well, yeah. We do the Middle East, but
yeah, or TT the Bears, because the pizza joint that's right across the street from the Middle East, that's where we've done interviews with Sushi Mamire, Detroit 7, Ketchup Mania. That's where I did the interview with the Clicks. It's a good area. It's quiet. I just hope that the owners aren't like pissed that we do this.
We've gotten approval from the owners a bunch of times saying, hey, we're just going to record something here. We didn't do it that time because it wasn't the same guy that's usually there. It was just a totally different guy. We just went over and just did it.
Yeah.
We just like, screw it, because that guy didn't even look like he knew what was going on in the first place, so we're just like, go for it. We've done it before. Let's do it. And then there was a couple other people sitting around us, and they were kind of like, okay.
Yes.
But yeah, for the most part, yeah, it was definitely interesting. I did like the whole aspect that we were able to get that interview knocked out of the park and go and rock out to some awesomeness.
Yep.
And
we should talk about the final day in P-Lander Z.
I was like, originally when I saw the lead singer there with the yellow beard and stuff like that, I was just like, dude, we were here originally to do some more interviewing, especially you. I was like, come here, don't run away. And he walked out of the thing. I was like, damn! So, but no, I mean, they were absolutely freaking nuts.
Let me ask you, what
Ill Shock was crazy. They just, and then when P-Lander Z came out, it was just absolute shitstorm. It was just crazy. It was just, I wasn't expecting that.
Your nephew was also the girl's cup holder.
Yeah, he was. My nephew was the pink
P-Lander Pink.
P-Lander Pink's biatch. And I mean, in the sense that she had alcohol in a cup, she came over to my nephew, said, "You hold that for 25 seconds. She runs around us. She disappears in the crowd for about 15 seconds. She comes back. She counts about 1, 2, 3. 4, 5, and then she goes and grabs it. Thank you. And then she goes and runs on stage. Bink. She finished that off, comes back and says, yeah, you hold. And he goes, wait, this is an empty cup. What the hell? And then, of course, she ends up falling on him when she's coming down the stairs because she's a little tipsy, but she was awesome nonetheless.
Yeah.
Did you see that awesome picture I took of her?
Yeah.
She's like, screaming. She's screaming and she's just like, ah. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. That's when angry.
Now when was the last time you've ever seen a conga line happen at a punk rock show?
That was like, what, the second or third song in?
Yep. P-Lander Red jumps off the stage and everyone just starts going do 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 do.
Alright, I do have to say something about the one aspect that I hate. I swear, there's always something at these damn concerts that pisses me off.
I know what you're gonna mention.
Alright, these sons of bitches, about five of them. I want to say five or six. Came into the goddamn place with these paper hats of Cat in the Hat. Okay, now the question I have is where the hell did they get these Cat in the Hat things? And Cat in the Hat movie was done like 4 or 5 years ago now.
10 years ago.
Okay, maybe 10 years ago now. Jesus, that's how long that was. How the hell did they get this? And damn it, they ruined a lot of my photos because of the fact that the backing on it was white. So whenever a white flash hits off that and it's coming back to the friggin' camera, it either blurred it or it made them brighter and all the band dark. They just, no, it was like the band didn't exist.
Yeah.
In some of the photos that I took, so I was kind of pissed off about them. And I definitely was wanting to, like, hand the king the camera and just say, nephew of mine, throw me in the friggin' thing. And I, you know, just toss me in there and barrel bomb those sons of bitches. But yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the only things that really just got under my skin because of the fact that they were just so annoying.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you wear something like that? I mean, okay, I know that you're going to a band that looks like a bunch of Power Rangers. If you dressed up like Power Rangers yourself, that would be fine. Yes. I would be perfectly fine.
Absolutely.
But these guys had Cat in the Hat. There was nothing that prompted me to go, oh, Japanese band, Cat in the Hat. No. I don't think that. Dr. Seuss is not Japanese in any way, shape, or form that I know of. Is it?
No. He had a friend from Japan, and he dedicated Horny Hears a Who to, but...
That's it. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's what I'm saying is that nothing had to do with that. So I was just like, these guys come in with asshats, literally, for no apparent reason.
They just want attention. They just want attention.
Well, they got enough attention because a lot of people tagged themselves in our photos, so I was happy about that. But I'm telling you, if you're listening to this podcast and you've tagged yourself in our photos, just help us out. Just, you know, just press the go back to our main page, like when you see the album at the top, you should, I think it's on the right side. Mm-hmm. You should see the little square that says, you know, Boston Bass Brigade, or just the lettering Boston Bass Brigade. Click on that, it'll come back to our page, and just like us straight up. It helps us. It really does help us, because that's showing that we're building up numbers. We're trying to get out there, and if we could do that, we could get a lot more stuff for you guys to do. Like we've been working crazy. I mean, I don't want to take away from the actual like concert right now, but we've been working like madmen. And
yeah, he's not John Hamm styled madmen. We just loony bin madmen. Yeah.
We've been busy, and we've been getting codes, and we're working on doing a little bit more. You know, game aspect. I mean, I've been doing a lot more movies because of the fact that they're ready and available at me, but lately we've been getting a little bit more game aspect and stuff like that. So hopefully we're going to be able to start doing a little bit more and getting that out to everybody. So, but back to the concert, P-Lander Z was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, to have the bassist, when I saw the bassist, he had like the strap, and I looked at the strap and he had a little battery pack on there with a wire hanging out the end of it. I was like, oh crap. He's got a portable setup, and that means that he's got a wireless system that goes into the board, and that means full reign of wherever the hell he's running around at. So he came running out into the crowd, and he talked to the crowd and had him not body surf, even though he did that later. They lifted him up by his feet,
yes,
and held him up while he was playing a bass solo.
Yes, there is a if you want a good idea of this. There's a famous picture of Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Back from the 70s, where he's doing that in the audience while slapping peanut butter all over his chest.
God. I can't even. I don't even want to know that. I don't know why he's slapping it. I don't want to know. But
there's no reason why he was doing it. It was just there. Okay. Someone in the audience had peanut butter in the 1970s. Iggy Pop goes down and goes, whoa. I know what I can do. I'm so high on drugs right now.
Yeah, well, my only thing is at least he doesn't have peanut allergies. But
yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, it was absolutely amazing, especially because of the fact I think they probably pissed off the security guards.
Yeah.
And I know this because the security guards weren't able to do most of their job in the first place, and I feel really bad for them. I mean, I know Clay Inferno. He does his damnedest to hire the best people that he can and run the Middle East the best he possibly can. But I just think the crowd was just way too much for security.
Not to mention, I think the band was just, you know, feeding off of that, and they didn't care. They liked this sort of stuff.
They didn't give a shit. They just went all out, and it was funny because of the fact that they had the pans with the drumsticks that they passed out, so people were playing the music along with them, and it was like. I've never really even seen anything. I can't even describe like what I saw. But I mean, if you go and take a look at the photos, you can maybe get an idea. But
I think the best way to describe it is Flaming Lips sometimes do a setup like this. They get some audience participation. But at times, I feel like Flaming Lips still kind of close themselves out from the audience such. But
okay, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. I think if you take the Blue Man Group, they break the fourth wall.
Yes.
Okay, so if the concept of that is if you have a stage, and the stage is basically your four walls, most of the people don't step out of that boundary. Like, they don't want to be that close to the crowd. They don't feel like getting balled. They don't get anything. But these guys don't care. As Japanese bands or anybody else, they don't care. They randomly grab people out of the crowd to play instruments while they were running around doing other shit.
Yeah.
Which was crazy.
Which is awesome. I feel bad for your nephew because he really wanted to play the drums.
I know, he really wanted to play the drums or guitar. If you take into retrospect, like, recently when I was with my girl watching one of the shows, I believe it was America's Got Talent or something along those lines, or it was just one of those type of shows, and Blue Man Group got, you know, introduced on there, and the whole setup was, you know, they started playing their songs, and they actually had these big, giant, like, what looked like ping pong balls just getting tossed out into the crowd that had lights in the middle of them, so they're all lighting up and everything. Everybody just got into it because of how crazy it was.
Yes.
So, if you take that, and you kind of mix it up with how these guys from P-Lander Z is, that's almost close enough to explain to it. But the only thing is seeing that we're at the upstairs at the Middle East, it's so intimate that no matter what you do, you're on top of one another, right?
Yes, yeah.
So,
hence why he introduced us as P-Lander Cambridge. We become part of the band for that one night. And I'm sorry, when he brought out that unicycle and he's and Pelina Red is on a unicycle wearing that giant squid-like thing on his head.
Where can you look out of on that thing?
I think if you look closely at the eye, it's kind of got a mesh see-through.
It's got a mesh
It's got a mesh thing in there.
But I mean, they did some the most random things. Like that thing's going around in the crowd, and then they have like a rope that they pull out of nowhere that I never saw them pull out. They're wearing luchador masks, screaming Mad Tiger, and like running around, and everybody's playing limbo in the crowd because they're trying to jump under the rope. It was like, what the hell is going on? I don't understand what's going on. So,
And the fact that I don't think anyone was on drugs during that time, for them to just do this so free and willingly.
I couldn't tell you if there was any drugs involved.
Well,
because
you can usually smell in the air. Like,
No.
Oh, yeah,
that place you couldn't light up without a security guard being on your ass, but... But I mean, in that sense, that place just was absolute madhouse. I have never seen that crazy of a show in the upstairs. I mean, next to Tsushima Mariori, but she was like going to take somebody out with her bass because of how she was like flipping it around and dancing and stuff. It was scary.
Yeah.
So,
and not to mention when Mari jumped into the crowd during the song "No Misa Shortcake" and she's on the floor like going crazy in the guitar. I was afraid someone's gonna like land on top of
her or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've just never seen any show like that, and I can only imagine what they would do if they had like the House of Blues. It would just total friggin'. Just mess.
So what we're trying to say is, for all you big bands out there who happen to be fans of the Boston Bash Brigade, please let P. Landers Eat and Electric Eelshock open up for you, because the sheer insanity that will happen at their shows will be off the grid.
Yep.
Or off the radar. Or off the whatever you want to call it.
Or it will scare people into liking it. No, I'm just kidding. All right,
but yeah,
I think we can cut off on that.
Yes, I believe so. And we can move on to our next topic of the movie that we saw. The latest film from writer, director, and playwright Martin McDonagh, Seven Psychopaths, starring Colin Farrell, Sam Rockwell, Christopher Walken, and Woody Harrelson.
I don't know what to say. I can't. It's like anything you really mention about this movie...
will be a spoiler.
It's almost a spoiler right off the bat, but
so maybe we should say right now that this review may contain spoilers.
Possible spoilers, but yet it's dysfunctional and funny at the same time.
Yeah.
So if you're not normally like used to this kind of a setup, like if you didn't go and see the other movie previous to this, which was
In Bruges
that the director did. You're not going to understand where it's coming from.
But I still feel like you can explain In Bruges easily, like what the film is about. Seven Psychopaths, there's just so much going on in this film, and how it manages to tie in with one another, it's mind-boggling. And it's really hard to really just put into few words as to what this film's about. You have to like write like a whole chapter of a book to truly describe this movie.
And then some, because it's just
with footnotes.
I don't know how the hell you're gonna how to explain it because of the fact of how it started. Okay, at least I could start with like we could give you a little bit of a taste of like what it was. There's two guys that are standing at this place. They look kind of like the dam or something like that, like some kind of setting like that.
Yeah.
And people are running, you know, on it, and they're talking about killing some girl or something like that because they're waiting for this woman to kill. And they're talking about something about people getting shot in the eyeball or all this other stuff. But lo and behold, you have to kind of watch what's going on in the background. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleman that's walking in the background that has a mask on. And of course, if they weren't so enveloped with themselves talking about the concept of shooting somebody in the eyeball, they wouldn't have gotten killed.
Yep.
So the character, who's the Jack of Diamonds, comes up and kills both of them in a very glorious fashion. But yet, the blonde kid, he's been in so many friggin' movies. He was in that Sandra Bullock movie with Counting, and something numbers. It was Murder by Numbers. That's what it was. He was from Murder by Numbers, and he was just sitting there talking with the guy, and I was just like, wow, that's a way to use an actor, you know, that has some serious pull, but...
Yeah, you shoot him in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and never bring him back.
So, the character of Marty, played by Colin Farrell, he's trying to write this screenplay,
which is called Seven Psychopaths, which is kind of funny because you're not expecting that to be the whole... You know, they always... When you see something like that, like, if it's called Seven Psychopaths, they're always going to have something that kind of references, but it's never actually referenced in the thing. Like, they said Seven Psychopaths for the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, the whole writing aspect that he was trying to do was he was trying to take Seven Psychopaths and try to make them seem peaceful because of the fact that his character is a pacifist? It's just,
yes!
It's funny because it's like, you know, he wants to write a story about these people that are killers. There's going to be blood, and he just doesn't want it, but yet he's going to write about it. That's what causes, like, another conflict with himself because he keeps drinking. He has, like, he's an alcoholic.
Yeah, which is easy for Colin Farrell to act out.
Yeah, well, more or less, they even pick on that where they're like, you're Irish! And, you know, it's just built into your system. You're an alcoholic. You're a writer, and you're Irish, and you're alcoholic.
That's true. What was it? The Spanish got the bullfighting, the French have the cheese, and the Irish have alcoholism.
I'm part Irish, but I'm not an alcoholic. I'll have a beer here and there.
Yeah. You're good with your alcohol.
Yes, I am.
You're like me. You're a self-conscious drinker.
Yeah, right. So, more or less, yeah, like... The whole setup that goes on with the movie is based around this, but he has his friend, who's played by Sam Rockwell.
Billy, who he's an actor, or he wants to be, but he also has got this whole dog thief business going with the
Hunt. That goes with Christopher Walken's character, because what it is Sam Rockwell will go and kidnap the dogs, wait a couple days till he sees the rewards put up on the thing, people will put up money for rewards. And then he'll give it to
Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken's nonchalantly walks up to the door, knocks on the door, and the people will give him the money that they put up on the post reward, and they get their dog back. So, but with Christopher Walken's character, his whole setup is he's getting that money because of the fact that the love of his life.
Yes.
The love of his life is in the hospital, and she has cancer. So he's trying to give her money and support her in the best possible way, even though she's getting, like, a surgery and all this other stuff, so that she can, you know, live longer, and because he loves her so much.
Mm-hmm.
But yet,
they steal
the wrong dog, more or less, and without purpose or with purpose, I cannot really display if it was with purpose or not.
Right, because there's a scene that makes you think, wait, did he purposely steal this dog? Did he not know?
Yeah.
But then you kind of think, oh, and maybe he did. And we won't go into why.
But then the dog is named Bonnie, and it's a Shih Tzu?
Yeah, a Shih Tzu.
Shih Tzu, which everybody loves those dogs.
They just like saying it, especially little children. It's a Shih Tzu. Sue.
Or there's always that Dumb and Dumber one. If you take a bulldog and mix it with a Shih Tzu, you get a bullshit. Ah! Yeah, okay. God damn it. Anyways, so the setup with that is once they steal this wrong dog named Bonnie, the character of all characters comes into play, which is Woody Harrelson, and yeah. What's his name again?
Charlie.
And he's
the dog walker
He's a second or third psychopath.
I think he's the third.
He's a third because he skipped in a... That's the little thing that's kind of interesting because it's like they pop back and forth between who's the psychopaths and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say some of the psychopaths aren't completely real.
Yes.
Let's put it in that sense because some of them are made up.
Yeah.
But some of them are actually real and present and danger in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. But when Woody Harrelson character comes in right with the actress there from Precious.
Gabri Sidibe.
Oh, God. That was a funny scene. I thought, it's one of those things where he started saying, like, because he paid her to, like, walk his dog and stuff like that, and then the dog goes missing, mm-hmm. and he thinks that she's in on it, or he was going to do a killing or something.
I wonder if there's a way we can splice that one scene and put it into the movie Precious. That would have made the movie so much better.
Yeah, it would have made it so much better. It would have, because I don't know if I really wanted to watch that movie. But yeah, that setup was, it was definitely interesting to have her in as a character, but I don't know if she's doing anything of importance anytime soon. But no, just to keep on going from that, I think we could cut off at that part, because anything else more, I think that would, unless what?
We can mention Tom Waits with the bunny rabbit. Okay. Zachariah Rigby, and he's another psychopath that's got his own story.
Yes. But you got a little bit confused by it at some point because you're confusing characters.
Yeah, there was two characters that I thought were just one character,
yeah.
Which is not true.
Yeah, but for the most part, they did do an awesome setup with him because he explains that he broke into a house. I can at least give this part of the story, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Breaks into a house, he gets into which was a judge at the time, found out that there is these...
Dead girls.
Well, there was dead girls, and then there was one that was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, not for nothing, but Tom Waits is white, and the girl that he finds is black. And I believe her name is Maggie, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Maggie and him go on this little, psychopathic killing spree against psychopathic killers. So their whole setup was they were, like, the first kill they get... is, of course, the judge, but they didn't show that one. But the first one you see is them making out in the back seat of a car. Well, no, the front seat of the car. And all of a sudden, the psycho pops up on the back seat, and they go and point upwards. And he goes and looks upwards, and they pull the thing, and it pours this hot stuff right down on top of him.
And it's like an acid.
It was kind of like an acid or whatever, but they also, I think it had a gasoline mixture in there because she was able to just throw a match and it caught the thing on fire and they killed him. Like, they shot him dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got to the point where their love relationship was built on the concept of killing psychopaths, which was, it was funny because of the fact they're psychopaths themselves. So yep. it was definitely an interesting aspect, and of course Tom Waits pops up at the end of the credits and stuff like that with calling him back about something, but I'm not going to ruin that. But yeah,
because it is pretty funny.
It's a very clever movie, I have to say, altogether.
Yeah,
dysfunctional but clever.
My favorite part of this film, I won't go into what it really is, but Sam Rockwell's trying to help out Colin Farrell with writing the screenplay for Seven Psychopaths, and he comes up with the idea for an ending of a gunfight in a cemetery.
Yeah, and it was pretty clever.
Arrow through the neck, and yep. Then shotgun blast.
Yeah. Like, a head can't explode unless it has some dynamite in it or something like that.
The head has to be made of an explosive.
But, for the most part, that's pretty much what we could say in that movie. But to rate this sucker, what do you want to say?
This is another one of those movies I can just hang up on my wall. Yeah. A wall of fame. With that one, with Seven Psychopaths, and Bruges, and the movie Martin McDonagh's brother did, The Guard, with Brendan Gleeson and Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
I believe that when it comes to Irish films and cinema and plays and musicals, I feel like the final round, for if it goes into production, has to pass these two guys.
Yeah.
They have to look through it.
They have to give it approval because it's just one of those things where with the British humor or at least Western European humor when it comes to these type of movies and whatnot, they have this it's just a great coincidental type thing that always runs into the movie and they're able to do it. I mean, that's the funny thing is this movie's not even done in England, but yet they were able to do it in America and just do it beautifully. I mean, it's almost like how Monty Python's was able to do their comedy.
Yeah.
But these are like serious action comedies, so I love how they do that access. Mm-hmm. You know, with the drama and the killing and everything.
And the thing about Martin McDonagh movies is you can't really judge a film by its trailer.
This trailer movie confused the living shit out of me. After watching this movie, when I was thinking back to the trailer, I went, that trailer is so misleading. It's so misleading.
So it was in Bruges. I mean, you thought it was going to be just a dark comedy. You didn't think there was going to be some serious elements to the film.
Yeah, but next to Ralph Fiennes telling his wife that she's a fucking inanimate object.
Which, coincidentally, is what Avada Kedavra means in Harry Potter. You're an inanimate fucking object.
So that's basically what they did.
Yes.
Wow. Sons of bitches. Anyway. So my aspect of the movie, I mean, what are you going to give that for a rating, man?
I think I can probably give this film a really good 4.7 out of 5. And let me just say, Sam Rockwell's performance. I know he's been a leading man in some films. This is a type of film that I think he's going to win some awards for because he's so good in it.
Yeah. Wait, he didn't win anything yet? Has he won anything?
I don't think he has. I think he's been nominated. I think it's
the type of film... I mean, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was so freaking good. He should have won for, like, assisting actor or supporting role or something.
He might have won, like, something for Matchstick Men, the one he did with Nicolas Cage, yeah, which is still my favorite Cage movie.
Actually, I'm thinking I'm getting Choke soon that he did.
Oh, yes.
I might be getting that soon.
Okay, now. So, fair warning, it's more fucked up than funny. It makes you think it's a comedy. It's really not.
I'm expecting fucked up. It's the guy who did Fight Club.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's gonna be fucked up. But for the most part, I'm gonna give this movie a straight 5 because it was that it, like as much as you, when I came out of that, I was like confusingly funny or something awesome or whatever the hell I said. It was good. It was really funny to sit there and watch it and still kind of be like, where the hell is this going? Like it kind of kept you guessing. You didn't know what was going on and how things went.
And I love a good movie that makes you think about its inner meanings and all that stuff after you're done seeing it. Because it gets good conversations going. And
yeah, this is one of those ones that could be actually great, you know, start of actual conversations.
Yeah, the whole act of it could make a good debate.
Yeah.
Like, is Colin Farrell's way of pacifist the right way when it comes to dealing with psychopaths? Or is Sam Rockwell's way of just guns blazing the correct path you should take?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, more or less, I could say that we're done with that aspect. I'm done with that because I feel like if you mention anything else more, ruin it.
Yeah. We should mention right now that Blue-Eye's girlfriend is sitting in the room with us, just
going, what the?
her
expression is, damn it, what the? I want to know about this movie.
Her hands are crossed like this.
Oh, no, no. She said she's cold. That's why.
There's a jacket right behind you. You can put on your jacket, then his jacket, and then it can be nice and warm.
What she's saying is you got to turn on your heat. Tell your dad that. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so anyways.
So while we move on to the game demos that we got to try out this week. So the first one is a game that a lot of people have been waiting for. And I remember we got to see a presentation of this at PAX East this year.
Basically got to play the same exact thing on the demo.
Yep. XCOM Enemy Unknown. This is the first XCOM game since 2001. And the demo gives you the first two levels, and it's basically like a teaching tool as to what to expect. How you should use your soldiers.
Even though they kill half your, like, three-fourths of your unit. They're like, this is not the way how to do it, because their concept is like a turn-based game, but also it's strategy, and if you lose a soldier, they're not going to come back. You're never going to see them ever again. They're dead. Whatever you've upgraded on them, gone.
Yeah.
Dead. No more.
Because that's how Risk works, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's basically how Risk is. I mean, you throw the, you know, the dice, and, you know, your soldiers end up, and whatever happens, you take away the amount of soldiers, and that's how it goes.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of the game, and then the other thing that's pretty cool is that they brought back the ant farm aspect.
What do you mean the ant farm aspect?
Ant farm. You ever have an ant farm when you were younger?
Nah, I never had an ant farm. I wanted one, but...
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So if you have an ant farm, and, you know, they have the side view of your barracks and your home base and stuff like that, you're able to see it from an outside view of an underground bunker. So it's like, oh, you got to go to your barracks. You got to go upgrade your soldiers. You got to go to the science lab. You got to upgrade some science stuff. You got to go here. You got to go here. And then you got to get prompted for the next mission. So they did that cool little setup that I liked on when we got introduced to it. And then I saw it again. Which is good because of the fact that that's consistency. That means they're keeping that in the game because we played it. What we saw in the actual, like, thing at PAX East to now, they've kept it. So it's good. So I'm happy because then, I mean, I think a lot of that stuff was maybe under embargo at the time.
Yeah.
But
very under embargo. But we couldn't even get pictures of it.
We couldn't take pictures, we couldn't record, we couldn't do anything, so it's just one of those
We could ask questions, but we couldn't...
Yeah, so we could maybe talk about it, but we couldn't really talk about it, so it's just, it's one of those things. Once you hear embargo, you're like, ah, oh, great, maybe I should not listen to anything that you're saying right now.
Why do you tease me so much?
Yeah. More or less with this game, it kind of gives you, like, a setting, and it's kind of, a fixed third-person view from afar, that you gotta... You gotta set up your soldiers, get them to point A, point B, basically. Get them to get what is needed in the mission, capture aliens or kill them or do whatever you need to do to get the mission done. But, you know, you have to be careful because you gotta figure out what's the best point to be and how you're gonna save all your guys the best you possibly can, because a lot of them will get killed if you don't do anything right, so... It's definitely an interesting game to do a strategy aspect of it.
And what I like, too, is when you're at the proper angle to actually attack the aliens, it gives you the whole thing of this is how much of a percent chance you are of getting a hit.
Yeah.
So it lets you know if you should go this route or if you should
wait. If you should gun, grenade, or move back or do something so you can get into a safer position to take out the alien. It's very interesting how they did this game. But yeah, for the most part, it's pretty much self-explanatory because the demo is out now, so you can just go and play it right out. Xbox, is it on PSN?
Yep.
Okay, so you can get it on PSN as well. Probably on PC now, but...
Yeah, the demo's on Steam.
Yeah. So, more or less, if you can get a hold of it, you can see what we're talking about, more or less, because of the view aspect of, you know, seeing how you got to move the soldiers around. It gives you a 360-degree view of the area, so you can actually spin the camera around, but usually it's just kind of far off, like, you're looking down at the area.
Yeah. I like to call it, like, a helicopter view.
Somewhat, yeah, more, but from the side. Like, it's not looking down on a bird's-eye view, but it's on the side.
Right.
So
you're kind of, like, peering out the window, in a sense.
Basically. Which could actually be like a UAV. You know, UAVs like flying around the area.
Okay.
Looking down on the situation and stuff like that. But this kind of, like, when they kind of first introduce you and they have that guy walk up to the soldier that is being controlled by the alien and stuff like that, you're like, I would never do that. I would just try to flank the guy, find out what's going on, shoot the alien and save the guy. But that's just me. They more or less, they purposely had him kill so you could see what was going on.
Right, this is the wrong way to approach a situation like this.
Well, the orders were given, so you have to do it.
Uh-huh.
Which was really dumb. Dumb, dumb, dumb.
Yeah, it was.
Alright, so for the most part, as I could rate the actual demo aspect of the game, it was pretty good. I give it a 4.2.
And 1 point bigger than yours, 4.3 from myself. And I like how self-explanatory the game is. It's not one of those games where you have to figure out everything by yourself or on your own.
Yeah, they did the self-explanatory for the first things, and then you learned everything as you were going.
Yeah.
It's basically how they've been doing a lot of the games lately, which I like, because it makes you better that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So for one of the next demos that we got to try out was Forza Horizon. And I know you don't really like the Forza games.
Ugh.
But you do have to admit, when you saw that Dodge Viper, you must have been a little bit happy there. I would use another term, but your girlfriend's right there and I don't really want to say.
I wasn't pitching a tent on that one. No, I can't really say I was. I mean, I do like the Dodge Viper. I love it. But I still can't stand the Forza games. I mean, okay, I can give it to them on the aspect of, like, how it introduces the game with the music. I mean, I did like how they had the Chemical Brothers Chemical Brothers. That was cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome. But some of the music that they were using was already used by Need for Speed or
Codemasters.
By Codemasters and Dirt and stuff like that. And I was not happy about that because I'm like, you can't get your own fucking music? Like, what is your problem? Like, I know that music's popular, but you gotta set yourself away from that. But besides that, I mean, maybe they've gotten a little bit, just a tad bit better.
Yes.
At the actual racing. But as my nephew, because I had him come over the other day and he played it with me, he just went, this just doesn't move right. It just doesn't feel right. And the whole, like, we even turned, we messed around with the settings. We even turned off the ABS brakes. We turned off everything because apparently you're able to control that. Like, if you don't know what ABS brakes are, you're fucking stupid and you shouldn't be driving a car. But for the most part, ABS brakes are the setup that, like, if you get into a thing where, saying there's black ice on the road or you get into a slippery situation, if you don't have the ABS brake system on the things, you're supposed to pump your brakes. And what it does is it helps you slow down your car and get yourself out of the situation.
Right. And that, if you it's good to do that when you're on turns.
Yeah. But if you get onto a situation when you're actually, you know, get into a slip situation and you have ABS, you just hold down the brake and it does it automatically for you.
Okay.
But that's it's an automatic braking system. That's what it's supposed to do. So if you shut that off and you're trying to do the drifting and stuff like that, it still didn't make a difference. Nothing made a difference, really, in the aspect. I was able to win the races. I was able to do all that other fun stuff. But it still pisses me off because it doesn't flow. It just doesn't flow properly. I don't know if they're trying to go too realistic or not realistic enough. It doesn't help.
Well, I have a lot more fun playing something like Forza than something like Gran Turismo, which I don't. I'd love Gran Turismo, but the thing that I can't get over is the fact that with a game like Gran Turismo, you need to have that $150 wheel peripheral in order to really steer and drive it properly. Otherwise, you're trying to play in the small controller, and you're not turning at the right time, and you smash and you lose the race, like, 10 seconds into it.
Yeah, you can kind of leave it at that. I mean, but that's the aspect is if you're taking Gran Turismo, which is almost the most realist-based game in racing to date, you know, where it's almost like Formula One racing or anything along those lines, yes, it would be a good idea to have a peripheral setup where you got like three monitors or a wraparound screen or something along those lines that gives you more of a view, but also makes it almost feel like you're in the car. But not only that, you have to actually learn how to do automatic. Well, I wouldn't say automatic. I want to say manual.
Yeah,
transmission manual setup, because of the fact that when you're doing racing and whatnot, in real life, none of those guys are on automatic. There's no way.
No,
it's faster. Manual. It's faster to be on a manual car instead of an automatic because automatic is already tuned into what it is. So if you have a manual thing, you're the one controlling the gear shifting and stuff like that, so you can make the car go faster or slower, whichever way you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can learn how to do manual while driving the actual setup, playing Gran Turismo, you might do a lot better because of the fact that you're able to downshift a lot faster than you are with the automatic system. So yeah. I can understand what you're saying with that. So.
But that's what I like about Forza. You can actually switch between realistic racing and the arcade-style racing, whichever's the one that you're most comfortable with.
I don't think it was real enough on the aspect of when you're racing the Mustang against the plane.
I love that. That was my favorite.
It was cool, but it was like, I don't think because of the fact that the turning radius on the Mustang, it's the Mustang, the P-51?
Yeah.
P-51 Mustang plane would have been able to beat that out every time. There's no friggin' way.
Okay, so I take it you, as a whole, you did not like this demo.
I'll give it a respectable 3.5. That's probably the most respectable point system that I've given on that game. I can't really recall all the other ones, but I think they've been under 2. I think that I really can't, this is maybe a step in the right direction, but it's still, it's Codemasters is the best one that I could say for racing next to Gran Turismo because yes. I don't have my own PS3.
Well,
shut up. I know
you can steal Dark Cards,
but I haven't been able to play PS3 myself in my in the house because it's on the other row. That's the only thing.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. Well,
one of those things.
I like the demo. I really enjoyed myself playing it. I didn't win all the races.
Later.
I didn't win all the races like you did. I lost the street race over at the Gladstone Cell Tower. But altogether, I liked it. I don't care if the music's been used before in other games. If it fits with what's happening on the screen, it's good for me. So that's why I give the demo for this a 4.6 out of 5.
You son of a bitch.
Now, moving on to the next game, that kind of goes back to games
It's just not a go back. It's a throw way back, but it's modernized.
Yes.
So it's not like you're playing some game that's kind of based on like 1986 to 1995 or something like that. It's actually going, it's a game that was designed now, but yet has the same retrospect of how games were back in the day. So if you're not, if, probably unless you're around our age now.
Yeah.
Past 25 to now, or I mean,
you probably wouldn't understand why this game is kind of.
I know the kiddies, I know the younger ones are being like, this is absolute crap. You know, like. They'll be like, where's the, you know, Call of Duty blowing up shit? But
right.
I remember playing this game, like, kind of like how Grand Theft Auto was originally.
Yeah, the original Grand Theft Auto. The game we're talking about right now is Retro City Rampage.
So that's Grand Theft Auto Remake. No,
well, originally, when this game was first thought up of 10 years ago, yes, it's taken 10 years for this game to be made, it was originally going to be called Grand Theftendo.
Oh, God.
And then he
Because apparently all the characters I was seeing were stolen.
Well, the game is a parody, so
stolen.
So instead of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's the pubescent deformed samurai tortoises. Come on.
Pubescent deformed samurai tortoises.
It rolls off. Doesn't it roll off the tongue a lot better than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
When I get my truck back, I'm gonna get the straps. I'm just gonna strap you to the heart, to the front part of the truck. That's just basically how that went. No, yeah. No, it doesn't. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles easily. As much as fucked up as putting teenage and then mutant and then ninja and then turtles in one complete little form of whatever you can. Mustard as a sentence. No, I can't. That doesn't work. The tortoise, no. And then, what were the other characters that were popping up? What?
Contra, like, the A-Team, the Joker.
Mega Man, fucking what?
Everyone Duck Hunt.
Like, yeah. It got to me. It really did. And I was kind of like, wow, how is this person not getting sued yet?
Because at the beginning it says this game is a full-on parody and it's not really in with any of these ones.
Shenanigans.
But the fact that this guy, who made it completely by himself, with the exception of the music, which was also done by the dude who did the Double Dragon Neon soundtrack.
Yeah.
I think it's a great throwback to the old games. Our generation is now making the video games that we wanted as kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what Retro City Rampage is.
Well, not only that, was back then they didn't have the capabilities or the technology to make even more of an advanced game. That was probably one of the most advanced games that I've seen that was like that. Because of the fact of how they redesigned everything. Like, if you were to take and do, like, an 8-bit game like that, you know, on a Nintendo system just by itself, it'd be impossible.
Yeah,
because of the fact there's so much memory and whatnot, and the cartridges could only hold so much.
But at the same time, it's very impressive. Because the game download is 44 megabytes. But for them to fit so much stuff into
that would take probably 3 or 4 cartridges, and I don't think they had a setup where if you did, like... You popped in one cartridge, you played it to that one point where it was like, pop in the next cartridge, it would lose itself.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It could probably fit on a Super Nintendo cartridge.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Or a Nintendo 64 easily, but...
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where I don't think it would be able to do that back in the day because of how much stuff, like, there was a lot more detail in there. You could tell what was a convenience store, what was a police station, what was what, because back in the day, you couldn't tell what was shit. Oh, there's a star in the front. Oh, that must be a police station. It's got to be a police station. And there's like a fire station or some stupid bullshit. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, that's fucking retarded.
There's a big donut next to that store. That must be the donut shop.
Yeah. Or how they used to play the old Simpson games or something.
Yeah.
It was really crappy.
The one game it kind of reminded me of, I don't know if you ever played it as a kid, the Dick Tracy one that they made when the movie came out.
Yeah, I remember that one.
The way the top down part when you're driving around the city, it kind of reminded me of that.
This is a legitimate bird eyed view, but the only thing that I can really put it towards is how, like, the Grand Theft Auto, like, 1, 2, and then, like, the England one, and then, yeah, all that other setup was an above view and a little block character running around and shooting little bullets everywhere, and you can spin them around and you just make a spiral, basically, and kill everybody around them.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was weird to go back that way. I mean, I know we've been doing so many retro games lately.
Yeah, with this, Fez.
Neon, Double Dragon.
Double Dragon, Neon. But I'm thinking more of the ones that actually look like games that were created back in the day. Kind of like all those games that we went to and saw at the Boston Festival of Indie Games, like that Ninja Gem one.
Yeah,
that looked like that was straight off from the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that cartoon aspect to it.
Yeah, and the Bandit Party looked right off of an Atari game, like, system. But this, I love a game that pays homage, tribute to the games in the past. As I mentioned earlier, when we were kids playing video games, I bet you we could have thought up of some great ideas for video games. Well, our generation now is the ones that are creating these games, and some of these people are going so far, like here at Retro City Rampage, saying, you know what, I want to make it the way my kid self would have played it, would have imagined it. Okay. And that's what Retro City Rampage is like. It's a true Nintendo-looking game for our generation and for the newer generation that wasn't old enough to appreciate the old 8-bit video games.
Yeah, but at least in this setup, they can actually watch it on a TV that, you know, they can actually understand what the hell's going on. I remember playing on those shitty TVs that sometimes you couldn't see exactly everything that was on the mm-hmm. that they were trying to display. It was just bad, crappy TVs.
One of the cool things that I didn't get a chance to show you, but you can actually change the graphics so they can actually look. So I need to stop using the word "actually" so many times, but so they can look like Microsoft DOS games or Commodore 64 or like the QBasic games.
Yeah.
So you can actually change it. So you can demake it even more and more to the point where it looks like a very, very crappy video game.
Or somebody puking on a game. That's basically what it was.
Yeah.
So what do you want to rate this sucker at?
I got to play a little bit more of it since, you know, I have a copy of it.
All right. As of so far.
So far, I'm really enjoying this game. When I played this at E3, this was the last game I played at E3 this past year. And what I saw of it just blew me away. From the parodies to the shooting aspect to just the whole gameplay all around. I was impressed by it. And to be able to play it now and see that everything is still intact from what I played at E3, this is a true, like, love letter to games of old. I can give it a 4.7 out of 5.
I give it a 4.1 because they killed Marty. And then they had Doc run up and he didn't go, "Marty!"
Yeah.
That's the only thing I have a problem with that game.
Okay, so we got one final game. One final game to talk about.
Oh god, I forgot about that one.
Yep. A sequel to a game that I didn't even know was popular enough to get a sequel to.
Me neither. I thought it was actually trashed already.
It was trashed. Naughty Bear Panic in Paradise. So, if you've never played the original, you play this bear who's got a little bit of like a scar on his face.
And he's got a missing piece of his ear.
And he is like not invited to like all the parties and shindigs that the other bears go to. So, you take revenge on them by either scaring them or killing them in the most craziest ways possible.
Like ripping him out of a boat and beating the shit out of him with a crowbar.
Yeah. Basically, if you really, 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 really hate the Care Bears, then you might enjoy this game.
Or otherwise, if you felt like that, you know, you dislike the Avengers, not the new Avengers Marvel style, the old Avengers that had Ray Fiends in there, and they had the big, big giant teddy bears that were running around.
Still can't believe Sean Connery dressed up as a giant bear in that movie.
Yeah, and he killed two of the bears with darts and whatnot. So yeah, if you want to relive that aspect of that movie of the old Avengers, yeah, go right ahead. Go right ahead. Yeah, this fucking game.
What I didn't truly understand about playing this game was you got to be more stealth. And right. Attack. You can't because, go.
Well, no, all right. I get that aspect, but that was just because I was trying to play the game and, you know, get it taken care of, you know, in that sense. If I had a little bit more time, yes, I might have taken my sweet time to go and kill people just like Manhunt was. Because yes. This is what that game was, Manhunt.
With bears.
First one with bears. And as scary as that might have been, I think the person who came up with this game might need a psychological evaluation. Like a serious one.
What was that other one that came out for like Xbox, like the Fairy Tale one that came out a while ago? Like,
I can't figure out what you're talking about.
It had like Little Red Riding Hood with a chainsaw.
Oh yeah, now I remember that one. Yeah, that was kind of effed up itself. But no, that one was kind of cool in a way because it was like, you know, they were like kind of like the Fairy Tale characters running around kicking each other's ass. This one is just out of the blue. This one's like, this person needs to be pumped full of lithium to make their life a little bit better because they decided to go and say, let's make a bear that kills fucking things. I mean, hell, just like the introduction of the actual front, you could press a shotgun and it blasts the hell out of a bear. Or when it's on the load screen, you could throw knives at a bear that's strapped down to a chair. As much as I'm having fun with that. I might be psychologically disturbed myself, but that was the only funny thing that I could really find out about that game. Like, it didn't run too smoothly. Like, when you're trying to do stuff, like, when I snuck up on that guy, he just turned around and he was like, oh, shit! You know. I have to really, really, really play the game to go and, like, figure out how to do things properly. And
okay.
I feel like you shouldn't have to strain yourself so much just to take care of, like, the simple little things, like grabbing a fucking bear, bringing him into a bush or something, or trees, as they called it. I call it a bush. It's a fucking bush, man. And then either ganking them or stealing their clothes.
Yeah.
And which some cases, I built, you gank them and steal their clothes. Why can't you just do both?
In some
Why
cases
do they have to make it so difficult?
In some cases, you can even steal their face.
I'm not fucking surprised.
But there are some levels later on where you're going to have to... Okay, so in the game, there's like one main bear you have to kill on each level. And you have to do it in the most specific manner. There are some levels, like in the demo, the Dugard Temple, you've got to kill the one bear before this other bear kills him before you.
Okay.
So you got to, like, beat him to the punch beforehand.
Yeah. All right, well, that's almost like Manhunt.
Yeah. So it would still be Manhunt with teddy bears.
You know what they should do is they should make a movie. And they should make a movie named Manhunt, and they should have Brian Cox as, like, the voice to, like, make him do stuff. I don't know who the guy would be to make him do the killing, but that would be an awesome movie.
Now, would you want him to have the regular voice, or would you like to have him have, like, the little fairy tale telling one like a naughty bear?
No, I want the, like, the evil Brian Cox voice that he does. He's awesome that way.
Oh, they didn't invite you to the party, did they? No.
No. That one was happy. It was like, they didn't invite you to that party? Oh, crap. Naughty Bear is not happy, and he's under the bus that they're all dancing in. Time to kill those little fuckers! It's all happy and pip-pip cheerio.
Kind I'm still surprised the game got an E10.
What was it again that was on the front part of it? It's nudity and...
Cartoonish violence.
Gratuitous violence and nudity. Possible nudity or something like that. I don't know. I
was like, but the bears don't have any junk or whatever to clarify.
You know what? The bears might have cleavage or something. I don't know. That they always do that. They always make the cartoonistic aspect of a female like an inanimate object. Basically, that's what they do.
All right, fine.
I can guarantee that.
All right. So I remember when we first started playing the game, and you saw the 505 games. Flash. And you have, like, a bad feeling sometimes when you see 505 games.
No. Well, that... Okay. Sniper Elite V2. Fucking awesome. Because of the fact that they worked with Rebellion.
Yes.
But then when you play some of their other games, like Top Gun, and I don't even want to mention some of the other ones.
Supremacy MMA. My God.
Oh, my God. That's so much ass. But that's the thing is I think 505 is out there to take whatever game they possibly can get and toss it in there and see how it does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they're like, they toss it in there and like, haha, money. They're like, it's a game, somebody put it together, slap our fucking name on it, bam, get it out there, do something with it. Hopefully it freaking makes us, you know, a lot of money, because I think Sniper Elite V2 was probably one of their best games that they've done.
Yeah, I agree. Which is why I was surprised when I saw their name on there. It was like, what? 505 Games did something good for a change?
Yeah.
But, all again, I can probably give the demo for Panic in Paradise a 3.8 out of 5. I enjoyed it. I liked it. Not as much as the other demos I got to play. but it had its entertainment value.
Probably 2.4 at the most.
Okay.
I can't really. It's. I mean, I know I could sit down and play it a lot more and then maybe get into it, but it's just, it's still my aspect of, like, when it's something supposed to be happy and fucking glorious or something like that in that sense, but yet it's on the basis of murdering. Like, that would be like taking Spyro the Dragon or Crash Bandicoot and turning them into a psychotic killer.
But that would be awesome.
But Spyro the Dragon runs around and bashes things, and Crash Bandicoot jumps and flips and bangs on everything anyways.
Come on. Picture Crash Bandicoot holding
a Uzi. It's just more gratuitous violence. It's not in the sense that he... It's not how, like, Mario Brothers or Sonic would jump over and jump on something and kill it that way. This is more or less... This is getting to the point where I think a kid would play it and go to the kitchen and grab a knife and stab somebody because they saw it on the video game. They're like, oh, big plush bear, go and stab somebody. I gotta go do that too. Yeah, this game's fucked up.
Okay. So on that note, let us stick a fork into this podcast program. Remember, visit our website at www.b3crew.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, you can reach us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at king_baby_duck. And you can follow Bluonic under Bluonic.
And then we got Tag, and then we got Darkheart. Well, Darkheart we're working on still.
Yes.
We're going to have to brown bag him sometime for one of the next shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do that probably for one of the next episodes.
I'm going to work today. Oh, no, you're not! We're on Facebook.com/Boston Bastard Brigade. So if you get on there, like us, or love us, or just kind of comment, or talk with us. We're lonely! No, I'm just kidding. But also check out the pictures that we're taking recently that, you know, of the events, and also we got the podcast, so whenever we do articles or links or podcasts, whatever, we'll put up the links right there and then, so that gets that live stream right to you as soon as we put it up. Yes. So more or less... just like us on there, and you'll have like an ultimate feed right to us.
Yeah, we've also got a Tumblr, b3crew.tumblr.com, but I keep forgetting that we have that, so I'm going to try my hardest to post more things on there.
Yeah, we're working on that. And then the other thing I'm thinking about doing is maybe going to MySpace, but that's because of the fact that, two or three episodes ago, we said Justin Timberlake revamped it somehow?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out how he revamped it, though. I'm going to have to take a look.
Okay. So, this coming Friday,
yes,
Bluonic and I will be at TT the Bears, seeing a fantastic band that we recently did a review of on our podcast show, Flowbots.
Yep.
And we might sit down for an interview with them, and you might be able to hear that sometime next week or the week after.
Yeah, that would be great. So, yeah, more or less, we'll be able to sit down with them and get in a great interview, hopefully, with at least the amount of the band, the most part of the band.
Yeah, like Johnny Five and Br'er Rabbit.
Oh, I hope so. That'd be awesome to be able to sit in the same room with them and pick their minds, because they, just for the aspect of how they rap, but also how they mix their music, it's just, I just want to know how the hell you get into that. How is it done?
Yeah.
I mean, they go from anywhere from the rap to the rock to, you know, a fiddle. You know, it's like, how the hell does that happen? And horns and everything. The jazz part too, just awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, fork that.
Okay. Down. So, until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
This is Bluonic.
Reminding you, you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard,
but it sure helps.